And this is WILL, FM and HD Urbana, broadcasting at 90.9 FM, serving Danville at 106.5 FM, and Champaign-Urbana at 101.1 FM. We're a service of Illinois Public Media, broadcasting from Campbell Hall for public telecommunication, thanks to a contribution from Allison Robert Campbell. This afternoon will be mostly cloudy, windy, and cold, with occasional flurries and some blowing snow, the high around 20. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 14 degrees. Tomorrow, cloudy with light snow arriving in the afternoon, the high 32. And the outlook for Thursday, partly sunny and colder, the high around 22. It's currently 19 degrees, coming up on 12 noon. The show's live and local. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's your connection to local music and more. And on the program today, later on, we will talk with pipa player Wu Man, who will be appearing with the Kronos Quartet at the Krannert Center this Thursday evening in a program called A Chinese Home. We'll find out why it's called that and more about the pipa. But the first portion of the program, we will be talking with Deborah Miller, who's development director at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, and also Bridget Lee Kalfus, who's public information director, about Krannert's recent reception, I guess, from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation of an award of $1.9 million, part of a consortium of three universities presenting for sustaining and advancing their classical music programming, which, of course, is certainly exciting to us in the classical music world and to you as well, I hope. We'll hear about that and some samples of some of their upcoming classical performances in just a few minutes here on Live and Local. Vladimir Horowitz, who is still one of my favorite pianists in the sort of music that he played anyway. That was Chopin's E major etude, his Opus 10 number 3, played here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Coming up later, we will talk with pipa player Wu Man. The pipa is a sort of a Chinese lute. She's going to be at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts Thursday evening with the Kronos Quartet in a very interesting program. I think any program by the Kronos Quartet at least qualifies as interesting, and made more so with her presence on there. And I had a delightful conversation with her, so I'm looking forward to playing that for you. But first, from the Krannert Center, we have two representatives with us on this portion of the program. Bridget Lee Kalfus, who's Public Information Director, who let me know about the topic we're going to discuss, and Deborah Miller, who is the Director of Development at the Krannert Center. And the headline reads, "The Andrew W. Mellon Foundation awards $1.9 million to a consortium of three university performing arts presenters to sustain and advance their classical music programming." And I'm very pleased to ask Deborah, what does that mean?
Well, it's actually a wonderful opportunity that we received from the Mellon Foundation, and it came to us. We had received a grant 3 years ago from the Mellon Foundation for a discovery course, what we call FAA 199 course, that was entitled Art, Creativity, and Diversity.
When you say course, you mean actually a...
Correct.
A university course.
Correct.
Okay.
It was a university course which was encouraging students who are not art students to come and experience things at Krannert Art Museum, at Krannert Center, and throughout the university. And through that class and through that grant process, Mike Ross, our director, and the center developed a relationship with the Mellon Foundation. And Mike had been talking with the foundation a lot about classical music and how there are so many challenges to presenting classical music these days because of the resources that it takes to really provide the, you know, to present the best classical musical classical music artists, and the challenges in developing the language, you know, making sure the audience is informed and engaged. And so these three presenters had had many conversations with representatives from the Mellon Foundation about these economic struggles and the struggles that they saw to presenting classical music, but yet our deep commitment to presenting classical music. And so we received a $600,000 grant over a three-year period to continue to present the best classical orchestras and soloists in the world, and to also continue to develop audiences further for classical music.
And did you say what the other presenters were?
I didn't. It's University of Michigan and the University of California at Berkeley.
So definitely both university presenters, all three university presenters. And is this money that is used immediately or used over time or used how you want?
It is used over a three-year period. So the first, we will be using it for the San Francisco Symphony, which will be coming to Kranert Center on March 18th. So that will help to pay for some of the expenses with that orchestra, as well as then some other of our artists that we have coming yet this year. And then each year we will receive an installment of that money.
And, of course, you don't know yet what's going to be used later on until you know what the program is.
Correct. We are just now finalizing the programming for the 10-11 season. And then Mike already has some thoughts about who he'd like to bring in the 11-12 season.
And can you help put this in perspective for us? You mentioned the San Francisco Symphony. What does it cost to bring the San Francisco Symphony?
Well, I'm going to let Bridget answer that.
You know, it's a complicated number in some ways because it's not only the artist fees but also hospitality and things like that. So this certainly would more than pay for one orchestra per season. But we're hoping that this money is not only going to pay the sort of artist fees and transportation and things like that, but it's also going to help support some of the engagement activities that these do. For example, some of the ensembles we bring in will actually do free performances for students. And so it's underwriting those performances as well, which would normally, you know, perhaps even double the cost of bringing in a large ensemble. But obviously, we're talking in the tens of thousands of dollars for some of the artists and ensembles that come for one performance.
Including the San Francisco?
Certainly.
So tens of thousands, meaning any idea what the artist fees are?
You know, anywhere between probably $10,000 and $50,000, depending on the artist and the number of musicians and things like that.
Well, for the orchestras, it's going to be actually over six figures. It's going to be at least a six-figure salary.
To bring like a whole
to bring
orchestra.
An entire, like the San Francisco Symphony.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. I mean, because listeners probably have not a clue. You know, what do these figures mean? I mean, like I've been watching the Australian Open right now. This has to do with my point here. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you exactly what Serena Williams made at her last in her last championship that she won.
Right.
Okay. And a lot of people know that about famous pop artists or sports figures or so on. But I think most people have no idea what is it like in the realm of classical music.
I think some of your high-caliber soloists, for example, might be anywhere between $30,000 to $50,000 for one evening of performance.
Somebody like Yo-Yo Ma or...
Sure.
It's like Perlman. Those are the two I've heard quoted at one point.
Certainly, or Kiri Takanawa, some of the great soloists, vocal soloists, would certainly be in that realm. And then, obviously, if you're talking about a full orchestra, you have to consider, you know, when we're bringing London Symphony Orchestra, we're bringing them overseas for long orchestra a trip, they might stay for a couple of days, do engagement for a couple of days. So the hotel bills and things like that easily, I would think, over $100,000.
Absolutely. Well, you're bringing 120 musicians and all of the instruments and oftentimes a very well-known soloist like when Lang Lang comes with the orchestra in April. And so the fees add up quite a bit. And ticket sales, you know, we try to keep our ticket prices as low as we possibly can. But ticket sales for performing arts centers across the country cover roughly 30 to 50% of the costs of bringing in that orchestra. Kranert Center is very fortunate in that we are a part of the university and we do receive university funds to help support our building and our salary lines and, you know, the productions and things that we do. But we do not receive recurring state dollars to bring in these visiting professional artists. So therefore, ticket sales might cover, you know, 35% to 40%. And then we get the rest of our funding for these through donations from individual donors, our corporate donors, and then, of course, grants like these that are critical in us being able to continue to have this commitment to classical music and to be able to present not only the best classical orchestras in the world, but also commission new works for classical music and then do the engagement activities that Bridget was referring to.
One of the groups that's coming this semester yet is the Artemis Quartet.
Absolutely.
Where are they from?
I think Artemis is based on the West Coast. I'm not actually for sure, but they've, of course, been at Krannert several times in the past and are a favorite in the past in our chamber series. And now this year we have the new classical mix series that they'll be performing on. And that performance is coming up on Wednesday, March 10th in the Great Hall, of course. And they'll be doing a wonderful program of Beethoven quartets. And I know that we brought some with us today to give people a little bit of a sample of what they might expect from that performance.
Yeah, at least one of the quartets in the program they're bringing is one of the group nicknamed the Razumovsky Quartets for who they were dedicated to. And this is not that one, but here's a movement from one of the other Razumovsky Quartets. This is E minor quartet, Opus 59, number 2, the Artemis Quartet, going to be appearing at the Krannert Center in March, and you're hearing them right now on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was the final movement from Beethoven's Razumovsky Quartet in E minor, his Opus 59, number 2, played here by the Artemis Quartet, who will be at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana in March.
March 10th in the Great Hall.
And they're going to be playing another of the Razumovsky Quartets and at least another couple or three quartets of Beethoven?
Yeah, all Beethoven program.
That should be great. And that voice belongs to Bridget Lee Kalfas, who's Public Information Director at the Krannert Center. And she's here on Live and Local along with Deborah Miller, who's the Director of Development at Krannert, and talking about this Mellon Foundation Award granted to a consortium of three university classical music presenters, Krannert Center at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, University of Michigan, and was it University of California?
At Berkeley.
So all three public institutions, which I think is particularly significant that this classical music is being so well supported by public universities.
Yeah, and of course private places do too, but as Deborah, you pointed out while we were listening to the Beethoven, there seemed to be a smaller number of classical music presenters at all.
Absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, presenters are finding it harder and harder to continue to have that very broad scope of being able to present as many professional classical artists as they would like. They're finding it hard because of the artistic expense of the artists, because of the advocacy and education, because of the lack of education, of course, that we're seeing, you know, the cutting of arts education in many places, and that so many students are not as involved with classical music. And so they're finding also external pressure to continue to present a more diversified programming. And so therefore, when they're needing to cut back, they're cutting back sometimes their classical music offerings. And Krannert Center, University of Michigan, and University of California, Berkeley are very committed to sustaining that broad, highest quality caliber of artists coming to these performing arts centers.
And they collectively got an additional amount of money to try to encourage other people to present more music.
Correct. It's a $600,000 grant for each institution over 3 years. And then there's an additional $100,000 specifically to promote collaboration between not only these three presenters, but presenters across the nation to continue to commission new work and then produce and promote that new work.
And did you tell me that Mike Ross wants to get these guys together to...
Absolutely. They would like to get together and actually have a conference where they will involve small liberal arts colleges who do classical music presenting, as well as the large public research institutions, as well as just arts advocates, classical music enthusiasts, to talk about classical music and the future and how we can involve more people and make sure that, as I say, we have classical music presenting and programming happening so that my children and my grandchildren are able to experience something like the San Francisco Symphony or the Moscow State Radio Orchestra that's also coming to Grand Arts Center. And so I think it's very important that we continue to find the best ways to keep classical music as a very prominent part of the arts community.
I know from talking with Mike Ross, I think at the beginning of this academic year, that as a result of the economic conditions and so on, Grand Arts did have to cut down on some of its overall program. And a friend of mine made a comment that he thought that there was less classical music in the mix this year. I haven't done any sort of tally myself. Has Grand Arts had to cut down the ratio of the balance of classical compared to other types of music?
Not compared to other types. For the 09-10 season, we did absolutely have to look at making sure that we were being fiscally responsible as we programmed the season. We did combine some series, so there was no longer a full chamber series and a full keyboard series. We combined those into the classical mix series. We're also still very dedicated to the Sunday Salon series, which is where we present emerging artists, and we did cut back the number of offerings of those, but we're still very committed to those offerings. And in fact, I just talked with Mike Ross when he got back from some of his conferences, and he is going to be expanding the Sunday Salon series back a little bit for the 10-11 season, because we do feel that that's so vital and important in presenting these new artists. So there were some cutbacks in our classical music offerings, but they were cutbacks that were seen holistically across our broad pool.
So the proportion is roughly the same as what it's been. So
Correct.
It's a perception issue just because of the total
Absolutely.
Thing. Well, you know, we're all facing that sort of thing.
We are. And as we program 10-11, we're actually, you know, still not sure of our state budget, our university budget. We are still not sure of our individual sponsors and patron sponsors for the 10-11 season. We're not sure of our ticket sales for the 10-11 season, but yet we're having to program at this point in time. So we just try to make our decisions, making sure that Grand Arts Center remains committed to classical music, remains committed to the broadest possible offerings and excellence of artists.
Well, you certainly have done that so far, and there's no reason to doubt that you'll continue, and this Mellon Grant, a Mellon Award, certainly should help out with that. Deborah Miller, Director of Development at the Grand Arts Center in Urbana at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and Bridget Lee Kalfas, Public Information Director. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And one of the performances that is of the classical ilk, with a twist or two, that's going to be at the Grand Arts Center on Thursday, is the Kronos Quartet with pipa player, a Chinese instrument, Wu Man, who will be my guest next on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Beginning Thursday, WILL and its community partners will team up to fight hunger. For every pledge made to WILL Radio, Common Ground Food Co-op will donate the cost of 3 meals to Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Your pledge makes great programs possible and fights hunger in our community.
That was music called White Snow in a Sunny Spring by Yang Chun Bai Shun, who was a Chinese composer, and a piece from the classical pipa repertory. that first appeared in 1895. It was played here by pipa virtuoso Wu Man and flutist. I'm identifying the wrong piece. This was simply called Love Song by Shan Mei Mei, also an old melody from southwest China, although I don't have a date for it here. Wu Man performing with flutist Julian Kaitasti on a shepherd's flute from the opposite end of Central Asia. Wu Man is going to be at the Kranert Center for the Performing Arts Thursday evening with the Kronos Quartet in a program they're calling A Chinese Home, which we will hear about. I spoke with Wu Man, I think it was last week, about her instrument, about Chinese music, and certainly about the concert and her experiences with Kronos, and I simply began asking her about the pipa itself. Since this is a radio program and not a television program, I wonder if you wouldn't mind describing physically the pipa for us. What is this instrument?
This is a plucking string instrument. We always describe this is a lute-like pear-shaped instrument. Basically, like a guitar, banjo, that's the way to play. With around 2,000 years old, exists in China. The original instrument was introduced to China from Central Asia, and later on become very popular in China. And with the four strings.
Four strings.
Four strings. And play with the right hand, play with the five fingers, like classical guitar. Yeah.
You play, I actually saw a video of you just today, and you sort of play opposite of guitar. You play with the outside of your fingers as opposed to the inside of your fingers?
Yes, the way plucking exactly opposite with the guitar, we play use a fingernail side, so it's all out.
So it's almost like you're flicking your fingers outward instead of pulling a string.
Exactly, yes.
And has it always been that way?
Always been that way.
When you, as a performer, do you have kind of the option to innovate and do it the other way if you want?
Yeah, of course. Well, I wouldn't say, okay, I take it back, not always that way. In the old days, in ancient time, we play with the natural fingernails. So because the string made by silk, much softer. And so the way play either out or pour back or forward, there are many ways to play. And according to all the traditional pieces right now we play, it's mostly or forward the way to play, to pluck the strings.
On the fingernail side.
On the fingernails. And during 1950s, some pipa master invented the string. Basically, we adopted the guitar string. So now we use metal strings. So the sound much louder and a bigger voice now. And so that's why the right hand, if you still use natural fingernails, doesn't go well with the strings. So we use a special plastic fingernails and taped on all five fingers and play mostly forward. That's the way. But of course, we do a lot of play backwards and like a guitar as well. So sort of flexible way. But the majority way to play is out. It's forward.
And did the adoption of the guitar strings, the metal strings, did that come about because the instrument was gaining in popularity outside of China and needed to be louder in different contexts than traditionally?
It is getting popular in China during the 50s. And always, that actually, pipa always, what I know, always popular in China. And I think during 50s, because feels like we wanted something louder and we wanted more people to hear this instrument, not only in the small setting. So in that case, we can play in a concert hall, or we can play for thousands of people. That's why invented sort of new strings, like guitar steel string, metal strings, instead of nylon. So the sound much louder.
Would you give us an idea of what might be some traditional settings for the pipa? Where would this traditionally be played?
The traditional pipa setting in the very intimate, family, not for the big concert hall in the traditional, and just a few people in the family setting, that's the way. And always come with a poem, singing, or sort of kind of a scholar type and in the early days, and later on became a popular and so involved in the local opera and company with the voice and with a small ensemble. So that's getting bigger and bigger with the group. And of course, a lot of solo repertoires. So that's the sort of the traditional
thing. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean now it's become, totally popular and a different kind of instrument.
So what happens? What would describe some various settings in which it would be used now in China?
In China, solo, definitely the solo instrument, and you can hear the solo recital solo in the concert hall with the maybe 500 audience. Also play in the big Chinese orchestra with the 10 pipas, with a setting like, hundreds of musicians together. And also with the chamber setting, chamber music setting with a smaller group, and all kinds of, actually, and even in the popular music, and popular song, movie soundtrack, we all use pipa.
And is there a distinction in Chinese music and in the use of the pipa between what, we've been using the term traditional and popular versus classical? I mean, are those three different kinds of music?
Yeah, that's the pipa music style. I wouldn't say a pipa is folk music, a folk instrument. In China, we will say classical, because it involved quite a number of music literature, and we have different style to play this instrument. We have we call lyrical style, which is slow and sort of beautiful, elegant. Music always describes scenery. Flower, moon, night, moon, night, just like Chinese painting, and leave a lot of space, gives you imagination, sort of meditation. You hear a lot of kind of typical Chinese music. The left hand, a lot of bending notes, harmonic, vibrato. And the other style we call martial style, which is dramatic, totally opposite with the lyrical style, which is very percussive, dramatic, and imitated a lot of battle sound and screaming, very, very loud in a way. So I remember when I played after concert, play some this kind of style, and audience came to me and say, "Wow, sounded like Jimi Hendrix." So that's kind of the classical music style, two styles. And of course, later on, we play in the popular music, electronic sound, all kinds of experimental. That's the difference.
Do people are there electric pipas?
I'm working on now.
Are you?
yeah. Actually, I made one, commissioned an instrument maker from the Bay Area, San Francisco, and he made a special electronic, for me. So I will premiere for the piece, A Chinese Home.
Which you'll be doing at the Krannert Center here in Urbana.
Yes, yes.
So this is the first you'll use your new instrument.
Yes.
What if it's not done?
We already premiered this piece in Carnegie Hall in New York last November, so I knew it's gonna work. And so the second concert will be your place.
Your place is the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. Wu Man is my guest on the who plays the Chinese pipa. She's appearing with the Kronos Quartet in a program called The Chinese Home this Thursday evening at 7:30. And you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our broadcast today made possible in part with support from Radio Maria in downtown Champaign, now with a new dinner menu, tapas served every evening until 2 a.m., along with lunch on Friday from 10:30 to 2:30 and brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Information on menus, wine, and beer lists is at radiomariarestaurant.com. Here's a little of Wu Man in a piece called White Snow in a Sunny Spring. Pipa player Wu Man in music by Yang Chun Bai Shun from 1895, or at least that's the first appearance in manuscript, called White Snow in a Sunny Spring. And Wu Man will be joined by the Kronos Quartet at the Krannert Center in Urbana this Thursday evening at 7:30, a program called A Chinese Home. You're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9, and continuing now my conversation with Wu Man. I'm Kevin Kelly, and talking about some of her own experiences with the instrument from early to a little later on. Talk to me a little bit about your learning of the instrument. I understand it wasn't exactly your choice to play this instrument, but obviously you've come to love it.
Like any other kids, you know, definitely needs push to learn everything. When I was, I also mentioned that, like, basically my parents picked this instrument for me, and they said, well, learn, play this instrument. Because my parents really, they're music fan, they're traditional music fan, and they especially loved this instrument. They thought, because my father is an artist, so he thought this with such beautiful shape of the instrument, and with a lot of beautiful poem describe this instrument, which is 1,000 years ago. And so always kind of like fantasy to have girl play this instrument. And so, well, so when I play, of course, started to play when I was 9, and it's quite demanding instrument for kids to start to play. Like I mentioned all the time, it's really difficult challenge for the right hand technique for the beginner. You really need the time to practice those tremolos with the 5 fingers. I was really frustrated for first year, and then of course I fall in love with this instrument and can't help it. Right now I can't do any other things only but this instrument.
Is it a common instrument for young kids to learn, or is some other instrument more common?
It's common, but when I was learning, we don't have a smaller size. It's just a normal size, and for kids, it's just quite difficult to hold the instrument. And now we have smaller size for kids to learn. It is common, but for kids to want to learn this instrument, they need really to know, like, okay, I really wanted to learn. If I want to just learn for my parents, I will suggest, no, don't learn. It's not that easy.
It's too hard.
Rather just play piano.
So it's not quite the equivalent of picking up a guitar. Because,
yeah.
I mean, you can play the guitar at many different levels, and it seems that one can play the guitar and perform it with a fairly basic knowledge of the instrument, but it doesn't sound like that would be true for the pipa.
No.
Not at all.
No, yeah.
And then your early experiences with the instrument when you began to actually perform, solo initially, and then?
Solo.
And then what?
Then with a school ensemble.
Of
smaller ensemble.
Of other pipas?
With other different traditional instruments, mm-hmm. like bow instrument, dulcimer, flute. Start with that.
Erhu would be one of them?
Erhu, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yangqing, which is called dulcimer, Yangqing. And beads, which is flute. That's very common traditional instrument. And the pipa definitely is there. So start with the solo. All the practice, all the pieces play is solo piece. And then later on you have a bit more experience and you can play with other instruments together, play some folk tunes. That's sort of like a progress to learn the instrument.
And when you decided to come to the United States with your husband, how did you come because of him, or did he become because of you, or some other reason that you ended up in the United States?
Well, actually, the reason was, I wouldn't say the reason, seems like so serious. The late, early 80s and the middle 80s, Chinese government decided to open the door to the West, and I first time I heard Seiji Ozawa bring the Boston Symphony to China, to Beijing, and I went to a master class with Isaac Stern. He gave a violinist, all the younger violinists from China, he gave a master class. I attended that class in my school, and gradually all some Western musicians visited China, and for student, being a student at the music school in China, that was such shocking experience for us. I realized, besides our own culture, there's so many different things, so many different music outside China. So when the Chinese government opened the door, and all my friends, most of my friends, my classmates, they left China. Went to abroad to study piano, violin, or maybe scientist, different things. And that's the reason for me. I wanted to know what's going on outside of China, how the musician's life outside of China. And also I questioned myself, how can I survive with this instrument not in China?
And how was your early experience trying to do that?
I came here with you're not going to believe, I carried six different instruments with me. I have pipa, I have a smaller version of a pipa we call Liu Qing, and I have dulcimer, I have zither, just to prepare everything. And also I prepared, my friends told me, they said it's very, very difficult for Chinese musician, unless you learn piano or violin.
Hmm.
And so I also prepared that maybe I will give it up, become a, I don't know, taxi driver or something else, which is my friend did. So far, I think I was very, very fortunate. So far, I'm still here. I'm still a musician and still play my pipa and play on the stage still.
Pipa virtuoso Wu Man in conversation with me last week, I think it was. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. She's going to be with the Kronos Quartet at the Krannert Center in Urbana this Thursday evening in a program called A Chinese Home. Here is a sample of an earlier collaboration with the Kronos Quartet. She's done several so far. This is from a work by Terry Riley called The Cusp of Magic, and is the opening portion of the second movement called Buddha's Bedroom. Genre-bending piece. We're just sampling the tiniest portion of it, a movement called Buddha's Bedroom from The Cusp of Magic by American composer Terry Riley, pipa player Wu Man with the Kronos Quartet, who are going to be joining forces at the Krannert Center Thursday evening in Urbana in a large work, theatrical work called A Chinese Home, which was inspired by a reconstruction of the Huang family dwelling from China. They actually took the home, disassembled it, reassembled at the Peabody Museum in Salem, Massachusetts, which Wu Man visited and was inspired to suggest the creation of this piece in collaboration with the Kronos Quartet. And she talks a bit about that in our conversation from the other day.
Well, the unique for us is we took the idea of A Chinese Home to basically we left the home. Home is just a concept. And not this specific home right now. So the piece going to different direction, going to different level, which is we use a home as a window and use all the Chinese, existed Chinese music from ancient music, from traditional classical to during Cultural Revolution and to the modern, today's modern music. And through that, home as a window to introduce the audience Chinese, basically to experience Chinese 20th century history.
And there is video with this, and other elements?
We have a video elements, we have staging, we have a costume. It's not like any other traditional concert setting. It is really like a theater, but played by non-actors, actress, played by musicians, by us. We have acting part. So basically, my role is a role in this story, sort of story or no story in this Chinese history.
Yeah. So you get to be an actor.
Well, I get to be. I'm trying.
Well, it sounds like it's one new experience after another for you.
It's really exciting. Well, I also mentioned that through the rehearsal process, we spend days rehearsal, and every time I look at the video part, I went through the piece, I feel that I went back to China again and again and again. Reminded me all the history of China, which I grew up, the China I grew up, the China I know. Especially the third part that we call the East is red, which is the 60s, 70s. That's the time I was born, I was growing up. So that's the China I remember. So it's quite personal and emotional to me through this piece.
Pipa player Wu Man will appear with the Kronos Quartet Thursday evening in A Chinese Home, as well as a ghost opera of Tandun. That's Thursday evening at 7:30. For more information, visit krannertcenter.com. On tomorrow's Live and Local, we will hear and talk with horn player Thomas Justlein, who is the new horn professor at the University of Illinois and recently of the New York Philharmonic. Our program today comes in part with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. It's going to be a mostly cloudy, windy, and cold afternoon with occasional flurries and some blowing snow, the high around 20, currently 19 degrees. This is WYLL-FM and HD Urbana.